Hey there, ladies and gentlemen. This is Doug from Barbell Shrugged. I just want to let you know that we now offer 11 of our top training programs as a part of a single membership site that we're calling the Program Vault. Now, we used to launch training programs every few months, and people were always bummed that they couldn't sign up at any time. You had to be around for the launch. The launch was only 4 or 5 days. If you missed it, then you had to wait 6 months or a year, depending on what training program we were offering next. And it was kind of a hassle, even when people were signed up for training programs, to switch to a different program when they got to the end of their current program, or they just happened to be in a new phase of training. They hit their past goal, and now they have new goals, and new goals require different training programs. So inevitably, it was a pain in the ass for people to switch programs. So we took all that feedback, and we decided to just put all of our programs together on this thing we now call the Program Vault. That way, all Shrugged athletes could have access to all the workouts that we have and move from program to program as they saw fit for themselves. Makes sense. So there's 11 programs. Three of them are long-term, very comprehensive programs where there's, you know, a warm-up and there's mobility and there's nutrition added in there. All the workouts are there. There's a cool-down. There's stuff to do on your off days. They're super, super comprehensive. And those programs last for over 18 months if you want to stick around for that long. And there's also 8 short-term programs. These programs are 3 months long, and these are basically add-on programs. So if you are already doing classes at a gym and you don't want to stop doing your classes, but you want to work on one particular thing, maybe you want to like work on your shoulder health, or you want to work on your conditioning, like your aerobic capacity, or maybe you just want to work on your squatting strength or your pull-up strength or something like that, then we have these short-term add-on programs that are super low volume, but they're just like an extra, you know, 2 or 3 exercises at the end of your workout to help work on whatever those very specific goals are that you have. So the 3 long-term programs are Flight Weightlifting. That's a very weightlifting specific training program. It builds you from someone who is more like beginner intermediate at weightlifting and builds you up to be a more technical professional style weightlifter, you know, over the course of 12 or 18 months. We also have Muscle Gain Challenge. If you just want to put on muscle mass and you want a higher volume training program, this, in my opinion, is more of an intermediate program. If you don't have good technique on the Olympic lifts yet, you're going to kind of be throwing right to the wolves, so to speak. It doesn't ramp you up like Flight does. Flight has very specific progressions for weightlifting to let you learn all the technique over time. Muscle Gain Challenge kind of just throws you right into it. So ideally, you already have some experience with Olympic weightlifting before you start the Muscle Gain Challenge. And there's a very high emphasis, of course, with the Muscle Gain Challenge on gaining muscle. So that means you got to eat a lot of food. So there's a lot of emphasis on how much to eat, what to eat, and your recovery as a part of that program. So that way you can get bigger and stronger. Also, we have Shrugged Strength Challenge, which is more of a traditional kind of CrossFit-ish program. If you do CrossFit classes at a CrossFit gym, you probably do some strength movements at the very beginning of class. You know, maybe you do front squats for 5 sets of 5, and then you do a Metcon that's, you know, 20 or 25 minutes or whatever it happens to be. That's more typical of the Shrugged Strength Challenge, where strength is the goal, but certainly conditioning is a key part of that as well. It has more of a strength bias than kind of a regular generalized CrossFit-y type program. So the 8 short-term training programs, again, these are about 3 months long, and they're kind of an add-on program. So the first one is Boulders for Shoulders. That's a shoulder health and stability program, health, mobility, and stability program. That doesn't mean you're going to be doing a whole lot of jerks and overhead presses necessarily. This is, again, an add-on program. So you're going to be doing a lot of assistance work for your shoulders, your thoracic spine, et cetera. That way you can have the healthiest shoulders possible. There's the Aerobic Monster program, which is adding in a bunch of extra, mostly aerobic conditioning. You're going to be on the Aerodyne a lot. You're going to be on the rower a lot. You're going to be doing a lot of monostructural stuff. So, you know, if you already have your regular workout, you do strength, you do your Metcon, and then, you know, as a very overly simplistic example, you do, you know, 20 minutes of rowing, or you do 30 on, 30 off for 10 rounds, or you're doing a hard 30 and an easy 30, or whatever it is. Just a little bit extra aerobic work. There's the Squat the House program, where, you know, we add in 2 leg exercises 3 days a week. So you might squat and then do some lunges or something like that. Depending on what your regular classes are like, you might already be doing a lot of squatting. But if you're not currently able to do a lot of squatting and you want to do some more squatting and you just want to add that onto your current training, then Squat the House is a great program. Anaerobic Assault, that is a high intensity interval style program where you're doing very fast Metcons. So you might be doing Aerodyne sprints, you know, 30 seconds on, 100% full speed, and then take a 3 minute break and do it again, or even, you know, five touch and go deadlifts followed by, you know, 10 burpees, rest 2 minutes and then do it again. But you're doing it all 100% full speed, really teaching you how to kick it into high gear and move very, very quickly when you're doing your Metcons. There's my first pull-up, which is not going to give you a whole lot of actually doing pull-ups. This is a program for people that can't do a pull-up yet, so there's a lot of assistance work for pull-ups, and there's a lot of extra assistance work for just all the muscle groups involved in doing pull-ups. Everything from just doing extra lat work, extra scapular retraction, rhomboid lower trap work, extra bicep work, etc., to help get you to the point where you can do your first pull-up. There's a strongman accessory program where you can be doing yoke walks, picking up stones, pulling heavy sleds, and things like that. And then there's two more programs that are kind of a little bit higher volume. You could do them on your own if you wanted to. And you also can combine these. You could do aerobic monster and anaerobic assault and my first pull-up all together if you wanted to, if you just wanted to add extra volume. But the last two, open prep, is exactly what it sounds like. Just gets you ready for the CrossFit Open or other similar competitions. You'll be doing a lot of Metcons. And the last one is barbell beginner to meet. It's prepping you for your first Olympic weightlifting competition. Each program is scheduled between 3 and 5 days per week. There's videos explaining all the programming. There's demos, there's technique explanations for everything. And then also you have access to the private Shrugged collective Facebook group. That way you can get advice from ourselves. We'll be in there hanging out. Our guests from our shows, we also have a bunch of athletes, coaches, and strength experts that are friends of ours that are in there too to help you out. If you're interested, since I've been talking long enough, you can go to shruggedcollective.com/vault for all the information. Again, that is shruggedcollective.com/VAULT. That spells vault. Go there, check it out. If you have any questions, email help@barbellshrug.com and enjoy the show.
Welcome to Real Chalk, a Shrug Collective production. Mike Bledsoe here. Stoked to be launching this network so that we can introduce you to amazing content providers like Ryan Fisher. We'll be posting new shows every weekday, so be on the lookout. As a thank you for listening, Thrive Market has a special offer for you. You get $60 of free organic groceries, plus free shipping, and a 30-day trial. Go to thrivemarket.com/realchalk. This is how it works. Users will get $20 off their first three orders of $49 or more, plus free shipping. No code is necessary because the discount will be applied at checkout. Many of you will be going to the store this week, so just hit up Thrive Market today. Go to thrivemarket.com/realchalk to get set up. Enjoy the show.
Alrighty, kids, boys, and girls, you know what it is. Yaya here at Real Chalk. You guys are tuned in to the Shrug Collective, and we got a brand new episode for you guys. And I know I say this a lot, but I promise you I also mean it every time I say it. This week is one of my favorite episodes, not just because of the episode, but how much fun we had with Joe recording this episode. Ryan and I headed out to Venice for the day, had an awesome day out there, and then headed out to his little crap shack, his little house right in Venice. And first of all, Joe made one of the most amazing coffees I've ever made, because him and his wife wake up every single morning and sprout their own almonds and make their own almond milk. It's absolutely incredible. I can't even put it into the same category as normal coffees. And as you can tell, I've been having wet dreams about that coffee ever since. We had an awesome workout right after the podcast. We were able to sit outside in his front yard recording this episode. It was just a blast all the way around. If you guys don't know Joe, he is now the director of sport at Spartan, but even before Spartan was Spartan, he was one of the first 10 people to join onto the team and start this huge movement that is now just taking over the world. Now, as the director of sport, he is responsible for like new obstacles, new challenges, new tasks that the athletes have to go through. But at the same time, working with Spartan, he realized that the whole 9-to-5 and always having to be available type of mentality was really burning him out. And he started a new thing called Runga, which is basically a retreat to unplug from society, technology, all those things. We had a super long conversation with him. I think the podcast is an hour and a half long. And we dove into all kinds of topics: Kundalini yoga, optimizing breathing, just unplugging from technology, red light, blue light, impact of technology. And my favorite thing that I've been doing ever since is controlling your morning. But I will let Joe take that a little bit more from here. He has a way better skill of explaining how to explain the morning, since he's been doing it for way longer. And he actually has a fun twist on it too, which I'm sure you guys are going to love. As always, you guys, we want you to be able to follow Ryan and I in our workouts, and not just us, but the entire Chalk gym. So you guys can do that now. Actually, we have hit a huge milestone in the past few weeks. We were able to secure 1,000 members for Chalk Online, meaning 1,000 members all over the world are following the Chalk programming that is CrossFit. And you also have a sweat class, which is more of a conditioning-based program. So to celebrate, we're giving away a full free month. So all you guys have to do is head over to crossfitchalk.com, sign up for Chalk Online, and use the code RealChalk, all caps, to get a full month for free. Literally, you have nothing to lose. You get to see our workouts. You get to see what I do, what Ryan does, what the whole gym does every single day, and you get to follow us along. So once again, crossfitchalk.com, sign up for Chalk Online, and use the code Real Chalk. That's it from me. I'm Yaya. You guys have fun with this one. Other than that,
let's roll.
No limits to the show. You can cuss. You can completely rated R.
Sweet.
Say whatever you want. And yeah, off to the races. All righty, kids. How we doing? We're sitting down. We're out in Venice today. Fish has got his shirt off. We're outside. Industry. Beautiful day here in Venice.
It's so nice.
It's so fucking awesome. Just had the best coffee possibly ever.
Oh, yeah. Our guest actually made it for us. Actually, we had to hand grind it.
Yep.
And then he did all the things.
Earn your coffee. So we're going to lift the blanket. We're at Joe DI's house.
Yeah.
The Spartan guy, the breathing guy, the fitness guy, the whatever. We linked up at PaleoFX.
Yeah.
That was the first time we crossed paths, and then we decided, since we are so close, we're not going to take that weekend. We're just going to come out here and take a little bit more time, sit down with you at your home, right. Maybe check out your new project that we're going to bring up in a little bit as well.
Sure.
For everybody that doesn't know you.
Right.
Let's just...
There's a lot of people out there.
Yeah. Well, hopefully a little less after today.
Real quick, let's go over the porch real quick. We have an assault
bike.
Dude,
I know. This setup is probably my favorite.
We got at least 10 kettlebells, some dumbbells. We got a D-ball. I mean, all I want to do, as soon as this podcast is over, I want to get after it for sure.
Yeah, we're sitting outside in the sun. This is my favorite setup we've ever had.
But guys, I'm really, really excited because this man's done a lot of cool things, and then he's turned a lot of the things that like ruin our lives into a very more like zen type of experience. So that's really, really cool. So let's talk about the first thing that really changed your life a little bit, which is probably the Spartan race.
Well, before you take the stage from this poor man.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I'm just excited. I had this. The coffee fucked me up.
The coffee fucked you up.
The coffee fucked me up.
And maybe a little bit more than that. We'll give Joe the stage first. You can introduce yourself, say whatever you want. And obviously, for the rest of the show, we're going to talk over you. So
perfect. This is great.
Get it out now.
No, I'm psyched to have you guys in my home. You know, this is funny. It's I rarely leave home. You know, I've spent the last decade traveling the globe and never spending more than 2 weeks at home. And now I've got, you know, it's funny that people call this the Crab Shack.
Yeah.
And it's just this little house in Venice. It's 450 square feet. It's very minimalist. We've got a...
It's really small. And even when I drove up, I was like, man, it's a tiny little house. Is that where we're going?
Yeah.
And then I walked up and I was like, I immediately loved it. Like, it's the greatest little house of all time.
But just driving around here with your truck was fucking terrifying.
Oh, my God. I felt
every
fucking
turn we took.
I felt like a Tyrannosaurus Rex in the land of Polly Pocket.
Yeah.
Right. Just like, raw, like the Marshmallow Man in Ghostbusters.
Well, it's hysterical because everyone on this street hates me.
Really?
Yeah. Because I'm the only guy. We're one block off Abbot Kinney, which is, you know, the hippest block in America or whatever they like to call it. And I'm the only guy on this street with a driveway. And I'm the only guy in this street without a vehicle. So my driveway has a fan bike in it, a bunch of kettlebells, dumbbells.
You can make some money on the driveway.
Oh, every day. every day people ask if they can rent my driveway. And I say, where else am I going to put my fan bike? You know, so it's kind of funny.
Well, and for those people who don't know, you also don't have a car. So you're probably the person on this block that least actually needs your driveway.
You can probably lease that for like $500 a month
for sure.
Just like one car.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's I've had the offer. But you know what's funny is I let one guy park in it once, and it drove me nuts. Because it's funny when you're in your house and you just think like energy. When you know there's a random car in your driveway outside your house.
No, I could totally see that. Especially when they pull up too and you're home and then some random person starts parking in the driveway. Like I could see how that's
I mean, especially Joe D because he could be naked.
Yeah.
In the sun.
Oh, yeah.
You guys, I'm talking over you. I have to tell you this story. I have not told anybody this story because it was 24. This happened 24 hours ago. So as you guys, you know, when you came in, you saw I have my back door that, you know, it's funny where we are. We're right in Venice. The sun, it rises over there and you can see this massive tree. So the sun doesn't hit this deck, this porch till noon. That drives me crazy because sun exposure in the morning is one of the most important things that we can do.
Right.
So I've got the back door. And the back door, I've got a little stool back there, and nobody can see me from the street. Nobody can see me from the street. So that's my naked sun exposure area. And most mornings while I'm drinking my coffee, and sorry, I overfrothed that almond milk.
To make this clear, guys, he's literally opening his back door, moving his stool all the way up to the edge of his property, basically.
Butt-ass naked,
and then he's sitting there with this little stool and this little laptop holder thing, and that's where he does his work in the morning.
That's it. You know, it's important to
get
the
dream right there.
If
any of you guys wanted to live in California before, now you really want to live in California. You're like, these motherfuckers are outside naked, drinking coffee, handmade. They have driveways with no fucking cars.
This story is about to end with Obama.
Ooh.
So
wow.
That's a teaser.
Wow.
Now we're going to go back to the beginning, and I'm naked in my house. So I'm in my kitchen drinking my coffee. And so once I get the sun exposure and I'm walking around the house and the windows are open, I put boxers on till about noon, right? Now
it's like so casual.
Yeah. So I'm in my boxers. And yesterday it was funny because I'm meandering around, and I left the gates open, right? The gates were open, which is rare. And I'm on a phone call in my kitchen, and I see a guy pull into my driveway, and he's on the phone. And I'm like, who the hell is this guy? But then I go about my business. I'm in my underwear. I come to the door. He's on the phone. I'm on the phone. He clearly sees him in my underwear. My call, I go in the house. So I have another 20 minutes on this phone call. When I hang up, I come out to the front again, and he's still in my driveway.
Still on the phone.
He's still on the phone. And I'm like, oh, what the hell, guy? Like, obviously, this isn't cool. So now I have to go get clothes on to kick you out of my driveway,
absolutely,
right? I'm not going to walk out like this, even though that would be cool. So I go in the house.
That would be the real, like, that's more like a Texas thing, though, I guess. Coming out in your underwear with a shotgun, right?
Right.
That would have worked.
It would have. But here, this is the funny part. I could tell he was, like, an intellectual, and he was, you know, I didn't know what was going on. But what I did deduce.
An intellectual.
What?
He means snob.
Well, yeah, that might be part of it.
I mean, he looked like an asshole. I'm going to call him an intellectual.
Let's be clear. He was better than me. And so I was like, you know what? This guy, you know, I know it's street sweeping day, so I bet this a-hole just couldn't find a spot. And he decided his call was so important that, you know, my driveway would suffice because, you know, the guy in his underwear is not going to kick me out.
Sure.
The guy with the bike in the front yard.
Yep.
So anyways, I come out and he's like signaling me. And then eventually he gets off the phone and he goes, hey, I'm so sorry. I got a call from Obama and I needed somewhere to park and take the call. And I had nowhere to go. And I'm like, oh, dude, like, that's cool, man. I would have done the same thing.
Hold on, though. Is this a real Obama phone call or is this guy like?
No, it was actually Barack Obama.
Jesus.
And
you never know.
So, no, seriously, I'm like, oh, my God.
I feel like that guy found the one response that he could have given you where you just go, oh, no, you're cool, man.
No, well, that was the thing. So then he's, you know, we're cool, and he introduces himself, and I won't say his name because you can Google him, which I did as soon as he left.
Yeah.
He worked for Obama.
Oh.
He was in the White House with Obama. He was in Obama's, like, cabinet or whatever. And, so we parked here for a better part of the afternoon. I was like, oh, dude, you know, it's cool. You know, Obama's calling me in a little while. So he went shopping or whatever, came back an hour or two later and left. But, it was a pretty funny story.
Wow.
Wow, that's really awesome.
You never know. You never know.
You never know what the fuck happens to you when you live in California.
It's crazy.
I guess that's the that's
like, when
the
I grew up in New Jersey, that would never happen.
No way. If someone in New Jersey parks in your driveway and then they say that they're taking a call from Obama, someone's getting their ass beat.
Oh, for sure. 100%. A lot of fighting. Yeah. Or, I mean, yeah, nobody calls the police.
No, definitely not.
Well, that's the beauty of the sun. And you know, honestly, like one of the big selling points of this particular kind of property for me is the fact that almost every week I have friends over. We have, you know, we do Sunday Funday a lot, where when people are in town, I told you, Amelia's a raw vegan chef. So whenever friends are in town, we have them all over on Sunday. She cooks raw vegan desserts, and we do coffee. We do a workout. The ice bath tank's right here. So it's a lot of fun. And, you know, this is such a transient area, right, that every week there's someone in town that wants to come hang.
Yeah,
so,
that's cool.
We've done some pretty epic workouts in this driveway with some pretty heavy names in the industry. So. It's a lot of fun.
And we're going to add Ryan Fish to the list right after
yeah.
this.
Oh, yeah. No, we have some signature workouts. So I think we're going to make him do a little bit of an endurance workout.
Oh, I love it.
So, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
I already worked out twice today, so I'm taking the pass on this video
should.
This one. I'm okay.
Awesome.
All right, so let's start with the Spartan thing. I think that's really, really exciting. I think for a lot of people in the world, they don't they can't really comprehend starting something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of the Spartan race, or a lot of people actually nowadays probably already have done Spartan race.
Right.
Everyone sees the stickers on the cars.
Right.
The Spartan finisher shirts.
Yep. Yeah,
everywhere.
Man. It's insane.
But yeah, I actually never thought about the business side of it as well.
Oh my God, it's got to be just massive. Yeah. Like, what does it take to run a race?
You organizationally?
Yeah.
It's an outrageous amount of work.
That's what I'm assuming.
It's, you know, obviously the production itself, this course that we have to build across, you know, depending on the venue, sometimes you got 2 weeks to build this thing, but other times you don't, especially the stadium races that we now do. And, you know, we just had Dodger Stadium a couple weeks ago. And when you're going to do an event in Dodger Stadium, you got less than a day to set that thing up.
How much is rent for Dodger Stadium for the day?
A lot.
Oh, astronomical.
Oh, yeah.
Is it a five-digit number or a six-digit number?
I actually think it is a five. Sorry. No, it's a six-digit number. Yeah. Oh, sorry. When I heard that question, I was like, he asked six or seven.
Yeah.
And that's why I went with the lower one, but you said five. So, no, it's, six. So it's quite a production. You know, it's a ton of work. Obviously, the obstacle builds are, you know, it takes pretty trained professionals to build those things up to code and to make sure that they're going to be safe, yet can be teared down and the following week, and you know, the amount of marketing that has to go in.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, that is probably the biggest engine in the company is, you know, you got to get people signed up, but then you got to kind of nurture them leading up to that event that's scaring the hell out of them, and then you got to follow up and try to get them to sign up again. And, you know, it's an impressive machine.
What's the marketing budget for, like, one race?
I don't think I can disclose a lot of that stuff. Just, you know, I don't know.
I just wonder, like, things like that just kind of blow me away because I think people are like, oh, I'm going to do an obstacle course.
Right.
Because I've heard people say, like, I really want to do, like a children's obstacle course. I've heard this before.
Right.
Like, oh, we should do, like, a little mini, like a 1K or, like, a 2.5K, like a, you know, like a short little 5K race, but for, like, little kids. I'm like, oh, that's a good idea. We can get into that. But then I'm like, I don't think you guys understand. You have to, like, rent, like, a whole area. You have to, like, market it. You have to have insurance for it.
Yeah.
I mean, you can go on and on.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's
but it's a lot bigger than people think. Even running a gym, people are like, oh, I could run a gym. It's super easy. It's like, oh, can you?
And right. It's all the little shit, too, that you just don't think about.
Yeah.
Like, you and I talk about all the time how much money you spend on toilet paper a month.
Yeah.
And it's all these hidden expenses that when you
open the gym.
That's
because people steal the toilet paper.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Or the amount of toilet paper that I've seen people use an entire roll and throw the actual roll into the toilet. I'm like,
but that's exactly it, right?
They created an actual poop chute into a poop chute.
But, you know, and that's the thing. And, you know, we all know this. You know, I think we all run businesses. And it's always so much more expensive than you think. But your customers or your former customers or your not customers, they always want to say, man, he's charging $200 a month for his gym. Imagine he's got 100 members and they're doing this quick math.
Yeah.
Right,
it's
totally.
Like, dude, I spent $350 last month on pens. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
You know, so it's that's always just the nature of being a business owner. And it's definitely a challenge at, you know, at any business.
So let's get back to the beginning of Spartan Race. Yeah. When we were chatting before, you mentioned you were like one of the first 10 people basically into the business, like right when they were starting.
Yeah.
Now you're the head of sports running it today. So where did you get your foot into the door, and then how did you get to where you are now?
Yeah, you know, it's hilarious. And, you know, this industry and this world, it's all about who you know, right?
Totally.
And back when I was in college, so when I went to college, I didn't do that well in high school. And when I went to college, I was undeclared. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I couldn't get into any science programs. I definitely couldn't get into business. And so, you know what? I actually went. You guys talked about T-shirts a little while ago. I actually went. I think I was a graphic design major. But that was just the thing that I could get into college to do.
Right, totally.
And
you can keep smoking pot while you're a graphic design major.
You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And, so funny. So, but in my mind, I was very undeclared. And I was like, I got to do business because I'm kind of good at running businesses. And mm-hmm. So anyway, about 2 weeks into my career at college, I bump into this guy, and he looks kind of fit. He looks, you know, healthy in the eyes, but you know, I wasn't like taken aback by the look of his fitness from his body. But he's like, yeah, I got 100 miler next weekend, and this is in Boston, so he's got the Boston accent.
Yeah, that was good.
And I'm like, 100 100 miler? What the hell is that? Because when I was 18. A marathon's as far as the body goes.
Right.
And that's when you
die.
The end. You know, the 26.2, the 0.2 is there because you die at 0.3, yep. Right?
That's actually how it started, actually. Right. The guy died. Who did that, yeah.
Yep.
Right, in Greece.
So it's actually funny that you bring it up because for me, I played football for so long, that limit is at exactly 100 yards. Once I get to 101, I die.
Yeah. So heaven forbid you're in the back of the end zone when you start.
No way.
That was the best comparison of all. Yeah. I'm going to write it down and laugh at it later.
But these are the self-imposed limitations.
For sure.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So when I went to college, I played baseball as a kid. And when I was in high school, and you know, I fractured my skull and I didn't do many sports after that. But I was pretty out of sport, but I remember thinking, why the hell would anybody run if they're not in a sport? Like, why would I run if I'm not flagging fly balls? Why would I run if I'm not tackling somebody?
Yep, totally.
And when I was in high school, my view of people that ran
it's
for
like
fun.
It's like the carrot on the stick type of thing.
Yeah, it was like, what on earth is that about? And then when I heard this guy, you know, and I had been out of sports for a bunch of years because after the skull fracture and my neck was a little messed up, it was just not a good match. When he said he was running 100 miles, I was like, if that guy can run 100 miles, I'm running 13.1 right now. Like, I can do a half marathon right now.
Yep.
So I signed up for a half marathon and suffered through it. I think it took me like 2 hours and maybe even longer. And I was like, I was pretty sold. And then I kept talking to him. His name was Jeff. And he was the head of the exercise physiology department at the university. And so I ended up talking to him, and he took me under his wing, and I became an exercise science major. And,
what? Is that what you went to school for?
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, this was in the early 2000s. 2004, I'm a junior in college, and he says, at the time I'm running marathons and doing a little bit of triathlon stuff, and he says to me, you want to do this event? It's called the Death Race. And I said, the death race? Hell no.
Sounds like fun.
I like living. Like, what are you even doing?
They're a living race.
So the death race was actually Joe DeSena, who started the Spartan Race's first project.
Oh, okay.
So every year, Jeff Godin says, hey, you want to do the death race? You want to do the death race? You want to do the death race? No, no, no. And I don't want to meet this lunatic in Vermont who's named Joe.
Yeah.
And then long story short, maybe 2007, I kind of stopped talking to Dr. J for a little bit. 2010, he calls me. He goes, hey. And at the time, I have a gym where we're flipping tires and doing a lot of like high intensity stuff. He calls me in 2010 and he goes, hey, you know that lunatic that does the death race? And I said, yeah, I don't want to meet him still. I don't want to do it. And he goes, well, there's a new race. He just started called the Spartan. You should come down. And so he's like, it's 5K. You'll be done in an hour. But it's all the elements.
Thank God they changed the name.
Well, no. The death race continued, and now the death race is back.
Oh, no
so
way.
So the death race was a 24-plus hour just suffer fest.
Wow.
I did one death race camp like in 2011 or 2012, which is this 24-hour prep, which I won't do again. But so that was the start. Dr. J kind of dragged me in. And again, I never in a million years in 2011 or so thought this would ever be my full-time job. I thought it was cool. It was fun. It's not really a business. You know, Joe's not making any money. People, how long are they going to do this? You know, we're just making them run under barbed wire. And at the time, we had literal wrestlers that looked like you guys that would prevent you from crossing the finish line. Like, you'd come in and they'd be like, you're not.
I actually did one, and that happened. Yeah, but they had the bags.
Yeah, like gladiator sticks. Mm-hmm. So I never thought it was going to grow legs. And then, 2012, 2013 specifically, just boom. And that's when everyone came on full time. Everyone gave up their other jobs. That's when soon after Reebok came in.
Yeah, 2013, I did a Super Spartan.
Right.
Or the Beast one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
Temecula or something.
Yep, in Temecula. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it was fucking terrible.
Yeah. So that was a start, and that's it. So, yeah, here we are. A million participants a year later. And
wow.
We got, 60-some-odd events in the U.S. this year. Nearly 200 global events.
Do they always sell out every
Unreal.
Time?
Pretty much. I mean, sell out is kind of a, sometimes we probably go over our projection. Sometimes we go under our projection. We always make it out the other side, and we're still in business.
So. How many employees does it take to put one event together?
Well, so now there's actually, we have 5 crews in the U.S. alone. So the West Coast, right, that's a crew.
And that same crew flies everywhere and does all that?
That same crew will either drive or fly or move around. And, there's a handful of people that are preparing the festival. There's a bunch of people that are doing build. There's leadership. There's oversight. There's foremen. And then there's a lot of volunteers, which really help a ton just in terms of the little stuff.
Yeah, like CrossFit competitions. Got to have the volunteers. They work.
They do. They really do.
And we're actually going to a Spartan race, too. We're going to the one in Tahoe, which is, I think, is that the original one? Or why is that it's a big one, right?
It's a big one. It's called the World Championship.
Oh,
yeah.
That's why.
It's the.
I should have done my fucking research.
Yeah, I know. Hey. So the World Championship used to be in Killington, Vermont, which
just a rad place to go skiing.
Yeah, but just gnarly place to have a race. That that mountain's only 4,000 feet high, but it's steep as all hell. That mountain will spit you out again and again and again and again. And I think with the World Championship, it's also a little tricky to get to. If you live in Switzerland, to get to Burlington or Killington, Vermont, you got to fly to Boston, drive 4 hours, and all this other stuff.
Okay.
And then just the infrastructure surrounding the mountain isn't terrific for the scale that we've grown to. So Tahoe provides Squaw Valley. I mean, the 1960 Olympics were there. All the infrastructure is there to put on an amazing experience, festival, and event. And then the mountain, you're up over 10,000 feet. There's a frigid swim at the top of the mountain that we use every single year in Tahoe. So you're at 10,000 feet. You're 10 miles into the race. You're freezing your ass off, and you get to jump into 40-degree water.
Wow.
We can go into that if you'd like. That's an experience. For anyone that's run Tahoe, that swim is the race. It's the race kind of begins after that swim for most people.
Yeah.
It was, that water is, it's cold. I do a lot of cold immersion stuff, and that started the first year we went to Tahoe, 2015, because I was racing at the time, and I went into that water, and it was crazy. I've never had hypothermia before, but I like to say that Leonardo DiCaprio died happy in Titanic. He didn't suffer at all, because when I jumped into that water and it was freezing cold, I was frantic, just frantic. Get me to the other side.
Right.
Get me out of this. And about halfway through, I had this wave of calm.
How long does the swim take?
Swim's probably 4 to 6 minutes.
Ooh, okay. That's a good, decent time.
but you know what's funny about that is I was running with a former professional athlete and keeping up. That was 10 miles into the race, but I was probably at threshold for that entire 10 miles just to try to keep up. So
yeah.
I think I was already kind of beat. So I jump in the water, and like I said, I'm frantic, just going crazy. All of a sudden, I have this wave of calm, mm-hmm. and it was like a psychedelic experience. It was all of a sudden, I hear the birds, and I stop, and I go, oh, my gosh, I wonder what bird's making that noise. I start to look. I'm like, this is the most beautiful place I've ever been. And sure enough, I had hypothermia. So
I was slowly dying.
After a couple of minutes, I stopped dead after that frantic behavior to try to get to the other side. And I sat there for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes.
Wow.
And then somebody was like, dude, move. You got to go. And then I get out of the water, and I was shivering for 8-9 hours.
Whoa.
After that. I went. Yeah. I finished the race. My time for the first uphill 10 miles was equal to the next four downhill miles.
Wow.
I was like the walking wounded coming down, and I ended up in the medical tent. Then someone threw me into a shower with the hot water on for a couple hours. I was shivering all night almost.
Wow.
So it was an interesting experience, yeah.
So that race definitely is no joke.
No, it's no.
For sure. Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the importance of cold immersion. You know, I think that I've become, you know, I started doing cold showers after that and started to, you know, really kind of get into it because I said that shouldn't have affected me that way.
I love cold showers. People think I'm nuts, but I'm just like.
I love it too.
Oh, it's the best thing ever.
Yeah. My favorite part of the cold shower, and I'll let you take it in a second too.
Hey.
Because we were talking about your morning routine before.
Yeah.
Before you made us this amazing coffee.
Yeah.
But my favorite part of the cold shower, and Chris from Deuce, since we're in Venice. It was actually his quote that he put on his Instagram like a while ago talking about his morning routine and how he always takes a cold shower. And he says that the thought of the cold shower is always worse than the actual cold shower.
Right.
And taking the cold shower first thing in the morning kind of sets me up with a thought throughout the rest of the day where going into anything, I feel like us as humans, we tend to just overthink and we're having conversations in our head that aren't actually happening at all, right? Mm-hmm. You have like a fight with somebody or an argument or something before you actually have the conversation.
Right.
And I think that whole cold shower thought is the same thing because you're standing there and you're like, oh my God, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. Right. And then eventually you do it and it's never as bad as you think it actually is.
Absolutely. Well, and I think exactly what you're saying said a different way would be, and I was tempted to do this, but I didn't know about the microphone. Uh-huh. But when you were in that thought stream and you were talking and we were listening, I wanted to just go to you and go,
yeah,
or just splash some water on you because it's the same thing. Like the cold breaks all those patterns. Mm-hmm. So exactly what you're saying, said a different way, is when you wake up, you're like, shit, I got to check my email. I got to do this. I got this person hates me. Oh, shit, I forgot to sprout my almonds, if you're me. You know, it's like all these different things. You have all these thoughts. And then you get in the shower, and it's like getting slapped in the face.
Yep. And then like, all of a sudden, you're here.
Yep. Yeah, now you're down. Now you're in the moment. And you're right. It's never as bad as you think it's going to be.
Absolutely.
It's like going to the dentist, starting a business, whatever it is. A lot of the negative is some kind of projection into the future.
Yeah.
And we fear a future that never arrives, as I think Alan Watts says. So.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
And that's where like a lot of the anxiety and all that stuff basically comes from. It's just overthinking the future and overthinking what might happen, even though you have no idea if it actually will. So besides the kind of mental aspect almost of the cold shower, what are some other maybe like the physical benefits that you get from it also?
Yeah.
Or the cold plunge, if you prefer that one.
Yeah, you know, well, the cold shower is a morning kind of ritual. I think that's the ice baths is, you know, that's next level. It's funny, both Amelia and I, you know, the cold shower is just a thing. It's like we barely even talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
But I think the big thing is that, you know, it's kind of a reflection of your nervous system in many ways. So that initial mammalian dive reflex. Right, that's when you get in and you first get your face wet, you first get the back of your neck wet, and you kind of get that, like that first shiver. That, you know, what that's doing for you is profound, and it's also giving you, it's telling you where you're at from a nervous system perspective. So in other words, it was.
I love this. I know where this is going.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like, and I don't even know if I should say this, and she might kill me, but like when girls go to get waxes. They say don't drink coffee in the morning before you get a wax because they don't want your nervous system hopped up. It's going to hurt. It's going to suck. And it's, you know, the same thing with the cold shower. It's like so much of it is this expectant pain.
Absolutely.
That if you're taking cold showers regularly and occasionally you have that like exaggerated, man, this really sucks today.
You can't handle it type of situation. Yeah.
Right. You know where your nervous system's at.
Yep.
When you're cool, calm, collect. You can walk in there and it's like nobody's – like you're just chilling.
Yeah. And just like you said, I think that has so many – it shows so many different aspects of your life, right? If you're not sleeping well, if you're not eating well, alcohol the day before, maybe too much caffeine the day of.
Right.
There's so many factors and it all shows.
It all shows.
Yeah.
It's a lie detector test. And this is super interesting. You know, we were all at Paleo FX and I met this doc that I have my blood work, but I didn't know this doc, so I didn't want to give her my blood work.
Okay.
But I met this doc, and she did all these different assessments on me from, like, muscle testing to just, like, you know, looking into my eyes and, like, asking these questions and, like, poking and prodding me. It was kind of weird, but I was into it. And, and she
That's how I feel most of the time.
Emailed me all these recommendations based on what she found. And this was, you know, truth be told, this was over an hour she spent with me, like, you know, watching different ways that I worked. And she sent me a, like, laundry list of things that I needed to do and supplements I needed to take.
Wow.
And I was like, man, this is kind of interesting. So I sent those recommendations along with the blood work that she should have been using to Ben Greenfield, who's a good friend, who's also, I would trust him more than almost any doctor on the planet.
Yeah.
And he goes, dude, these are all awesome. Like, these are all perfect recommendations.
So she crushed the recommendations without actually
having blood work. Right.
Wow.
Just by doing what we're saying. And it's kind of like what we're saying with the ice baths. And I think that there's so much that we can glean from just our behaviors and our attitudes and our that we don't put stock in. And, you know, I think that yoga has been around 5,000 years. So is HRV.
Yeah.
But now, like, all of a sudden, we can quantify why yoga is cool. And it's this whole new world. It's like, I got to get into breath work. I got to start holding. I got to start exhaling.
Absolutely.
So I think generally, and this is part of Runga, which maybe we'll talk about, is, you know, it's back to the basics and putting faith in some of that. Because everything you need is inside you.
Yep.
You just got to believe in that. And that's why the driveway is the best gym in Venice.
Yeah. There you go. Right. The driveway.
I was thinking about it. I was like, where is that? I was like, oh, we're here.
Yeah. We are. We're sitting in the driveway. Yeah, I think it's really cool how the fitness world is gravitating towards, and maybe not just fitness, maybe health in general, mental health also now. You know,
right.
It used to be always just how fit are you and how fast can you run and how far can you throw and how much weight can you put over your head. And now, you know, how long can you sit in silence is the completely opposite spectrum of that.
Right.
But if you can find a way to do both, you know, and maybe almost combine them, I always talk about like active meditation while I'm working out and being able to stay connected to the workout that I'm doing and how much that has helped me inside of the gym instead of just completely blown out and being a zombie and then after the workout you wake up and you have no idea what happened, right?
Right.
And then after those workouts also, I just feel trash for the rest of the day. So I work out really early in the morning. I work out like 6 a.m. usually with the class. And if I have that experience where I just go full zombie and I'm just kind of going through the motions, the rest of the day is just a grind, right? Mm-hmm. When I have the workouts where I feel really connected to the workout and I'm breathing and I have everything under control,
right?
I walk out of the gym and I feel like a million bucks,
right?
Right, I have so much energy just
right.
going through. So I think it's really cool that the mental aspect of gym life, but also outside gym life, is mm-hmm. becoming more and more important, and people are finding a way to merge those two together. Also,
absolutely. I mean, health, fitness, wellness. They're all different verticals.
Yeah.
They're all different. And all you have to do is go to the LA Fit Expo when it comes around again. I could not find one food. There were 60,000 people there. There was not one food inside the expo hall that I would have put in my body. Right.
Dude, that's the worst.
And it's health and fitness are vastly different things.
Absolutely.
And I mean, this is like with the panel in Paleo Effects that I was on with Ben and Mark. And, you know, it's athletes don't live any longer than regular people. When you're competing at the highest level.
I like that, yeah.
When you're competing at the highest level, you've bypassed health. Like, just because the guy on the couch is here and the professional athlete's on the other end of the spectrum, if you want to live a long time, you got to be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mentally and physically. So, I think that that's a huge element. And, you know, a guy that just left, I just had a talk with him because he came over and, you know, as he knows, it's like we do the BYOB ball work that I came up with. And he starts doing it. And then he starts doing his breath work. And I'm like, finishing up and I'll be out in a sec. But I told him, I was like, you realize that like these don't go together. Uh-huh. Like you don't walk into a restaurant and say, I'd like breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
Right? So like your breath work should be in the morning. Like that's breakfast. And your workout might be in the afternoon. That mm-hmm. could be lunch. And your dinner might be your mobility work. Right? But like you're gravitating, in my opinion, and what I tend to teach is that most mobility issues our nervous system issues. So if you're tight in your traps every freaking day, mm-hmm. they don't need stretching, and they're not short because of the way you breathe, or they're short the way that you're holding on to tension or whatever. So if I want your traps to relax, I gotta chill you out. Yeah. But if I'm about to put you through 5x2 deadlifts on a straight bar, do I want to chill you out? No, I want to slap you in the face and tell you to go get it.
Get
you
going.
So
yeah.
This is breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You have breath work, you have mobility work, and you have exercise. And only in, like, travel, busy, strain, like, whatever, only situationally should they ever go together.
because before a workout, I want to heighten your nervous system, and to get you more mobile and pain-free, I want you to lower it.
Yep, absolutely.
So, it's an interesting concept. But the last thing I'll say, and you know, I think I've spent the last decade trying to tell athletes that workouts are the gas station. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not where you put your car on the tracks and see how fast you can go. That's what the race is for.
Right.
And in fact, I've said repeatedly, like, your goal is to get hurt every race. That's your goal.
Yep.
And that's your goal because
you want to see where the limit is.
Right.
Yeah. And you want to go past it, ideally.
Exactly. And you can only earn that right if you've paid your dues going to the gas station. Mm-hmm. You can only do that when you have a full tank.
Yeah.
But if you've been treating the gym like a racetrack every Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning, you've got micro trauma all over the place. You got back pain. You got this. You're trying to get fit for this event. And then, like, you're 89% at the start line or 79 or worse. I can't tell you to go as hard as you possibly can because you're going to blow yourself out.
Yeah. One of our other guests, he calls it put money in the bank.
Right.
So he, and he said that was everything with meditation, with his mobility work. All that stuff is putting money in the bank. So then when game day comes, you get the full payout of everything. So that's exactly – it's just – different analogy for exactly the same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, that's it, man.
And I think especially in the CrossFit world, I think it's getting better, but it's still a big problem where, and I see it at our gym every single day, where people are racing, as you call it, mm-hmm. every single day, right? They're competing against themselves. They're competing against the leaderboard. They're competing against the guy that's right next to them. And their form is breaking down, So instead of focusing on the little things, they're just focusing on putting 5 more pounds on their back squat,
yeah.
and then they're all hyped that they got 5 more pounds, and it was like, yeah, but it looked like shit. And now you can't stand straight for the next 2 days, and now mm-hmm. your hips are all out of place,
right.
and what's the price for those 5 pounds? Instead of taking a step back, maybe going 30 less pounds, making sure it's perfect, and then working your way up from there. And I think the really, really good CrossFitters, the people that are going to regionals, the people that are going to the games, the people that are winning the games, are the people that understand that. They're
right.
the people that understand that 90% of the time you have to slow down. Mm-hmm. 90% of the time you have to sit on a box and work on your clamps for your rope climbs for half an hour.
Right.
Without getting your heart rate up, without flying through a Metcon.
Right.
Right. If your chest to bars suck, Ryan and I talk about this all the time, there's no point in doing 100 chest to bars 4 times. Right?
Right.
Because you're going to fatigue after 5, and then
right.
it's just going to get worse from there.
Right.
And then the whole muscle memory stuff, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. I've heard this analogy once with golf that it takes 100 good swings to make up for 1 bad swing.
Right.
So you can apply that to weightlifting. You can apply that to CrossFit where your body gets used to moving badly. And the more you do it, the more it just gets ingrained into you that now if you're moving correctly, it almost feels weird.
Right.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, amen. Like, yes.
I feel like that can go with anything. Like,
yeah.
even just the way you breathe, or even just the way you wake up in the morning, or even just the way that you, like, decide to even start your workout or end your workout, or the way that you do the workout, not even just the movements. Like, it's like there's so many things. Like, we have people who come in the gym, like, without any effort, they come in at exactly 15 minutes late. Every single day.
Yeah.
And
without
they,
any effort.
It's like
no effort, just perfectly late. 15
minutes late every single time, and they'll still go in and take a shit. like Bill.
Yep.
And throw a whole roll of toilet paper
yeah,
down.
Yeah, for sure. And then they come and hit the workout, and like everything just looks like a complete yard sale. And just it's crazy to me. Like people will literally have that same exact path every single time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
And not willing to change it. Like, not at all.
Oh, my gosh. Now I'm in, like, idea overflow.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, the fitness industry is wild. And I spent a lot of years either owning gyms or managing a franchise of gyms. And looking at clients, it's so funny how, let's face it, it's like, 10%, 15% of clients in gyms are achieving their stated objectives, right? So it's like, I want to weigh 149 pounds and climb Kilimanjaro next April. If that's their,
yeah.
right? And it's like, next April, they're like fatter than they were this April.
Right.
And they're settling for, Mount Monadnock.
How many of those people that walk into the gym fail within the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, right?
Exactly. Same day.
And then same day.
In my opinion, they failed
the
same
day. They
were
late to their consult.
Yeah.
For sure.
Exactly.
They ran on the treadmill for 10 minutes, which could have been them just walking to the gym potentially. Mm-hmm. And then I love when the cardio room is just completely completely packed, and there's no one on the weights. Just blows me away. I'm like, you could have just walked here.
Right.
You could have jogged here. Right. Like, that was free.
Yeah.
And then let's do some exercise. Like, I went to Gold's Gym when I was in Paleo FX at in Austin. And literally, like, I saw some things, because I haven't been in a regular gym like that in quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
There was people doing things that I literally wanted to go over to them so badly. I was like, do you know what you're doing right now? Because no one does. Like, I could tape you right now and put you on my Instagram, and, like, literally within 10 minutes it'd be on a fail blog somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, people literally just, like, this guy was on, like, a cable, and he just, like, as hard as he could, just and like
speed of competition,
unbelievable.
Bro.
I was like, oh man, like, where are these people getting this from? And there's so much information out there for free,
right?
Yeah,
that it's amazing that people do things like that still.
It is. I'm gonna tell a quick story, and this is hilarious. And I'm not gonna use names because maybe she still follows me on social. But there was this lady that years ago. Oh my god, this woman. I graduated college with no loans, no nothing, because of this person. we're gonna call her Miss Venice.
Okay.
And so what happened was, this is it, right? So at the time I became a trainer, and I was working at the front desk, and I was working at the front desk to make a little bit of money because I didn't have any clients. I was new, I was in college, and this woman comes in, and she literally goes, "Hi, I need to hire a personal trainer." And I'm at the front desk. I'm like, "Oh, perfect, you came to the right place."
Yeah.
Perfect. And she goes, "All right, great. I'd like to come in tomorrow at 6 a.m. And I'm like, "Okay, great. That sounds perfect." Yeah. Meanwhile, I already had a guy at 6 tomorrow that I ended up moving. It was like a great client that I had trained a lot. And so I called him, like, "Pete, do you think we could do 7 tomorrow? Because I got this lady at 6 I really got to meet with." I'm not even kidding you. You guys are going to laugh or not think I'm telling the truth. She goes, "Hey, so how do people usually do personal training? Like, do they buy packages?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, a lot of people do packages." And she goes, "How many should I buy? Like 100?
Oh my god!
And I go, "Yeah,
yes,
most people
do
100.
You should
do 100. Yeah. Most people buy about 100 up front." So she pays. She literally, I don't know what kind of business she was in. She drops cash, pays for 100 sessions. At the time, I was $52 an hour.
$5,000.
Drops it down, and I'm like, "Holy shit! Definitely moving Pete for this."
Yeah.
Right? So she comes in, and at the time I was a National Academy of Sports Medicine trainer. In other words, I was really excited about stability balls and upper cross posture. So she comes in, and the overhead squat assessment. So she comes in, and I go, "All right, how you doing, Venice? Hey, we're going to do a quick squat assessment. So what I want you to do is put your hands over your head and just squat, and let me see how well." She's like, "Oh, no, I don't do squats."
Oh, okay.
And I'm like, "No, well, see, it's not loaded. It's just an assessment. I just want you to do a squat to see, you know, how you move." She goes, no, I don't do those. My knees aren't very good. What else can I do?" Long story short, this lady made my life horrible. Mm-hmm. She trained with me Monday, Wednesday, Friday. She had another trainer at another gym across town that worked with her Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. And every time I wanted her to do anything, she'd be like, "Anthony would never have me do that. No way. No way.
God.
It was insane. But guess what? She paid cash. She bought packages 100 at a time.
Yeah.
I trained her every single day every single week for 4 years. Eventually, I leave that big box gym. I go open my own club, and it's all group training except for, guess what?
Venice.
One person, Venice. So she comes in, and one day, like, now I'm like, I got money in my pocket. I'm not in college anymore. I own a business. She said something to me, and I just kind of snapped, and I'm like, that's it. I'm, like, kicking her out tomorrow. Like, I'm done. And so she leaves. I go to the bank. I get all the money that she's owed, a couple grand, whatever, however many sessions she had left. I put it in my office. And the next day she comes in. I go, and I'm trying not to use her real name. I go, "Hey, Venice, hey, can we have a quick chat in the office?" She comes into the office. I throw down, like, the couple grand, and I'm like, "This just isn't the right place for you. Like, you don't like me. Like, you don't like the things I try to do with you."
Right.
Like, it was like a bad breakup.
Yeah.
Right? It was like a bad breakup. And she was.
It's you, not me.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I was like, you know, this relationship, like, you're actually, my big point was, I'm in the business of changing people's lives, or trying to.
Right.
I'm in the business of transformation. And you look the same as you looked 5 years ago. And that's not anything about you. That means I'm not doing my job.
Yeah.
That's how I interpret that.
Yeah.
If you're in the same pain, complaining of the same issues as you were 5 years ago, I'm bad. Mm-hmm. Or I'm just not the right fit for you.
Just not a good connection. Right.
Not a good connection. So 5 years, I couldn't get this lady to squat. Right. We would do, like, TRX stuff. We would do other stuff. So I throw the money. Let's go. Like, bye. Group training now. So she goes, 2 weeks later, I'm telling you, it was a bad breakup. She's like, hey, I was thinking about what you said. I really want to come back. I'm going to fire all my other trainers. I really want to work out at your gym. No, for like a month or two. And then finally she's like, I'll pay you twice your rate. I want to come back. I'll do anything.
Rejection breeds obsession.
Right. Yep. So I go, all right, Venice, I've got 1:30 in the afternoon. I have a half-hour session that you can pay the full rate for Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
Yeah.
Right? She comes back day one, squats ass to grass. Day one, hey, look, like, check this out. I've been working on this. All of a sudden, she can do push-ups. She can squat. She can run. She can push sleds. Wow. She can do everything. So now I was like, oh, my God, if I just kicked her out 5 years ago, I would have had a stress-free 5 years.
Yeah.
I probably would have had a transformation. And this transcends. So when there's clients doing that, I kind of look at myself. And the last story I'll tell is just yesterday a lady emailed me for private coaching. And I don't really advertise it. I don't do a lot of it. And she says to me, hey – it's like an inquiry form. Hey, can you call me at 4 p.m. Eastern time at this phone number? I'm interested in private coaching.
Okay.
And in my head, I'm like, no. I'm definitely not calling at 4 p.m. I'll email you and come up with something creative, because even if we're going to work together and I'm going to be your coach, I got to change this relationship.
This is not how it's going to work.
Because if I call you at 4, now you're the customer.
Right.
Yeah, you're the customer and you're always right, and I'm something else.
Yeah.
But so my email to her was like, hey, I'm not accepting clients at the moment, but I might be able to take you on July 1st. If that's agreeable, please tell me a little bit about yourself so I can decide if we're the right fit for each other.
Like it? Okay.
Send. And that was last night, so we'll see what happens.
Okay, cool.
But it's, I think in the fitness industry, we lose sight of the fact that we're results-driven consultants. And if a friend says, hey, I want you to get me off drugs, I'll smack them in the face. I'll scream at them. I'll do whatever it takes to get them off drugs.
Yep.
But if someone says, I want to lose 30 pounds, I'm like, hey, did you enjoy your workout today? Or how was your kid's soccer practice? Or all of a sudden, it becomes about something else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the big issue. So I think we got to look at ourselves as coaches and be hard on our clients. And it's tough from a business perspective. But long term, 80% of your problems are going to come from 20% of your clients. And though it's cancerous at times.
I do like almost zero class. I coach two classes literally a week at my gym right now.
Yeah.
Mainly because the other coaches need hours. I actually love coaching classes.
Right.
Way more than personal training.
Right.
But I make money personal training, and people pay me a lot.
Right.
But I did have one lady, the same thing, where she was paying me a lot, and I really wanted to hang on to it. And one day I was like, I cannot do this anymore. Like,
right.
It's stressful for me to figure out things for you to do. She'd be like, I can't squat. Mm-hmm. I'd be like, all right, let's do push-ups. I can't do push-ups. My wrists hurt.
Right.
And then I'd be like, okay, so we're going to do wall balls. And she would do wall balls. And I'd be like, okay. And she would do burpees. I'm like, all right, you can't push-up, but you can do a burpee.
Yeah. And you can't squat, but you can do a wall ball.
You can do a wall ball. So, like, I would have to, like, get really, really creative. And then some days she couldn't do those movements. It just kind of depended on how she felt. But what it turned into was just monostructural all day.
Yeah.
Just bike and, like, slam ball. And then, like,
yeah.
Row and slam ball.
Yeah. What's so cool, I think, about both of those stories, though, and this is one thing I always tell myself when I'm coaching class or when I'm dealing with clients, is that if your client or the person in class is not accepting whatever you're handing out, right, if you tell them, hey, don't move your feet that far on your snatch, and then they keep doing it, and they keep mm-hmm. doing it, right? You're to blame. It's all your fault.
Right.
And you said that perfectly, and Ryan said it perfectly. Well, you guys understand that it's actually coming from them, but you're good enough trainers to look at it the other way and just go, how can I get through to them? How can I get them to do what I want them to do while still thinking that, or letting them think that, right, they're right, and you're in charge, and you're totally fine. So I think there's a lot of coaches out there that just go, oh, he's just uncoachable. He
right.
just doesn't want to hear it. He's just here to do this, and he doesn't care about blah,
right.
blah, blah, right? And I think for a lot of people, it's just, no, you just haven't found the right trigger yet. You haven't found the way through to that person, right?
Right.
Some people love to get yelled at. Some people need to be comforted,
yep.
right? Some people, you need to tell them how awesome they are.
It's and the love languages of fitness.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I think it takes yeah. a great coach to be able to work with a person like that and then figure out, all right, what button do I push
right.
in order to get the reaction that I want?
Right.
So all of this basically is kind of turning into what you do now,
right?
Which is called?
Runga. I'm still with Spartan. You know, I'm still the head of sport there. But Runga is a passion project that's kind of just exploding. It's, you know, it's been one event a year. And this year we sold out the event in 2 hours. And, you know, it's 35 spots to go to the Dominican Republic.
Oh, wow,
and,
that's cool.
You know, last year we sold out in 3 days, and I was kind of pumped, and I was surprised. And I was like, wow, you know, 3 days is pretty good.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, 2 hours was pretty nuts, and we just launched the first immersion, which is what we were teasing at Paleo FX, which is 3 nights in Napa Valley. It it includes coaching with me and Ben Greenfield and 2 sessions with Scott Dolly, who's a good friend of mine who does a lot of manual therapy. And that was the – I mean – That is a truly life-changing event. It's 12 people, it's 6 industry experts, and it's a full immersion. You're going to get spit out the other side 180 degrees from where you are now. And the big thing with Runga is, you know, I think a lot of, you know, a lot of folks, the attention to detail is like you'll never find anywhere else. And that's why we can only do a handful of events a year. We've only done one event a year till this year. We decided to do another weekend.
Oh, okay.
But, the attention to detail is like nothing you'll find.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, you know, last year we were in Panama 7 hours from anywhere anyone's ever been, right? No one – you're not going – it's a digital detox, right? So no cell phones, no computers, no screens. So we were 7 hours from the Panama City airport. You basically take a left out of the airport, you drive till the road ends completely. And no one's ever going back there. It's a beautiful place. But when we were there, you know, you're swinging Dragon Door kettlebells. You're swinging. You're drinking dry farm wine. Mm-hmm. You're juving. Who the hell would bring 4 juve maxes to Panama and do all the shipping, all the customs, all that?
What's
right?
a juve?
Yeah, I don't know. Either.
You don't know what a juve is?
No.
Oh my gosh! Come
maybe
on.
Maybe I will after you explain
so
it.
So it's we got to get the juve out here. It's red light therapy.
Get the juve.
Oh, okay.
Near and far infrared. So essentially you're creating, you know, just like our home. That's Runga. So everything that's in that house right there, from the coffee to the juves to the fan bikes to the kettlebells, wherever we go, no matter how hard it is to get it there, that's what we do. We would never drink some local, you know, some Panamanian wine that we don't know the whole story about.
Okay.
We would never have coffee that we don't know the whole story about. We would never go get some kettlebells that we don't know if they're the best in the world. So Kettlebell Kings, Dragon Door, these are bells that we're all right with. So it's really unique. The food is, again, we bring chefs. We bring chefs that are famous in the United States with us because we don't want to rely on whatever chefs might be there.
That's awesome.
So it's a pretty unique event. You know, there's 1 event, 2 events a year. They sell out in a day. And, yeah, it's a ton of fun.
So what are, like, all the main things that you guys are focusing on? Like, it's a lot of the stuff we're talking about, right? Like, de-stressing and...
Yeah, you know, Runga started because, you know, when, obviously, with the growth of Spartan that just exploded, I was just burnt after, you know, 10 months of flying around the globe nonstop.
Yeah, you said you did 70 flights, 75 flights in 10 months?
Yeah, exactly. 70-plus in 10 months.
Wow.
So, like, for me, like... Because I don't travel a ton. Yeah. Like, I've been doing more recently than I've ever done in my life.
Right.
I think most people are like, oh, that sounds awesome. Like, why was it not awesome?
Well, but flying fucks you up, dude. Like, when we flew to Austin, I got to Austin and for, like, and that's not a long flight at all, right? Yeah. And for, like, a day and a half, I felt puffy and I just didn't feel good and my stomach was all off. And you just don't feel great coming off of a flight. And when I fly home to Germany, which is freaking 11-hour flight, I get off, and if not, I don't think it's just a jet lag. Honestly, I think there's a lot more to it. For like 2 days, I'm just not there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're radiated. You've been exposed to all kinds of germs and whatnot. The time zone, I mean, that's huge. Just from an evolutionary perspective, mm-hmm. I mean, it would take a lifetime to move across 2 time zones. Now we can fly across all of them in a day.
Yeah, that's
right?
insane to think about.
And I think that, you know, honestly, at the time too, my training. I would fly to – I remember one time flew to Paris and got off the plane and immediately did this, like, just ball-busting CrossFit workout. And that was one of the things in my mind where I was fucked up for the rest of the day.
Yeah, dude.
Like, and I got to teach a 3-day workshop after this. And so that's what I was doing, really. You know, we have a certification with Spartan called SGX, which is for personal trainers that want to become certified in training people for obstacle racing. So I would fly to Paris, teach a 3-day, 2-day workshop, go to Spain, teach a two-day workshop, then go to Australia and teach a two-day workshop. And it was just nonstop, right? So long story short, I was hired to speak at an event in Costa Rica, and I was like, you know what? I need a break. Then that event ended up getting canceled, but I was like, I got to keep that on the docket. Like, I got to take a break. I got to go down there. Mm-hmm. Left my computer at home, charged my phone, but didn't bring the charger because I was like, I got to take a week off the phone, and if I charge it and turn it off, I know that if I'm posting on social media or something, that's my lifeline if I get hurt hiking.
Yeah.
Right? So phone was off, battery charged.
But charged, okay.
No computers, went off the grid, did hot yoga, AM, PM. In between those yoga classes, I would go whitewater rafting, rappel waterfalls, zip lining, hiking, running, whatever it was.
Dude.
I ate amazing food. Just completely a lot of working in, a lot of reading, a lot of hammock time.
I want to talk about this vacation after the
show.
Dude,
100%, bro.
Yeah. So that's how it started. And then, you know, I said it felt like the reset button that I needed heading into the following year to do it all over again because that's what I've been doing since even before Spartan, my previous job. I travel a lot.
Yep.
So for the last 10-plus years, I've been traveling, and I was like, I got to do that every single year. And, you know, obviously, like you guys, a lot of my friends are in this industry, so I started to invite friends. And then we started to let people sign up for it 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And
cool.
So in answer to your question, there's all sorts of different verticals at Runga. Yoga, mm-hmm. kettlebells, meditation, food, surfing, free diving. We do adventure, right? Whether if we're doing zip lining or anything like that. And there's a world-class expert that comes with us for every vertical.
For every single thing. Mm-hmm.
So if you're learning to surf, you're learning to surf with somebody that's fucking awesome at it. If you're swinging kettlebells, you know, I brought Andrea Duquesne last year, who she owns Dragon Door Kettlebells. Ben Greenfield is the biohacking weight loss expert.
Yep.
Scott Dolly, who is called the Scraper. He's this guy who does a lot of iStim. He does all the manual therapy. Amelia teaches Kundalini yoga. So it's this, we call it this environment of possible failure. Because if you can't find what you're looking for off the grid with no phones, surrounded by 50 people that are just like you in the same zone, in the same, you know, world, trying to hack their health, this is it. Like, this is the place. And we've just seen just outrageous transformations. People just, whether they want to reset and go back to what they were doing,
yeah.
It's not uncommon that people leave, reset, and want to go chart a new course. They want to have a new job. They want to, you know, we've had a lot of corporate folks.
I was going to say, do you have like people who like need to be on their phone and their computer and they're either like one, losing their mind, or two, come back and they're like, fuck that thing, I never want to do it again, and like their life is completely different?
So, well, that's the thing, because everybody insists that they need it.
Yeah.
But the reality is, you know, we have satellite phones if we're off the grid, and, you know, everyone's got the number at home and email, and, you know, there's an iPad that's available to contact home at any time. And so there's safety measures, but a lot of people say they need their phone, but that's bullshit. You know, it's fear-based stuff. It's like, well, what if my dog gets hurt? Well, that's what the iPad is for.
Yeah.
So a lot of those people switch. And the other thing is, after 5.5 or 6 years of taking people's phone away for a week, I can tell you at least 50% of people, when they get their phone back, because we literally have taken them, when they get their phone back, at least 50% of people make a joke about not wanting it back.
Yeah.
So, and that means something. Like, there's something in there. It's led to a lot of people that now take weekends off their phone, or like I was telling you earlier, first 2 hours of the day, no phone.
And why exactly is that? Let's explain to everybody why you do that.
Because it's never good news. You either, you know, you have an email, you didn't finish something yesterday. There's, someone commented on your Instagram and they were offended by your post.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't get enough likes on your post last night. Like, whatever it is, it creates thought streams. So in the morning, you have to control these first 2 hours of every single day are the most important 2 hours of the day, in my opinion. So it's about listening to music that doesn't create thought streams. It's about, so you would never wake up in the morning and like put on Eminem.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to get into, unless you're going straight to the gym, I guess. But if you're like me, you know, you want to kind of get in the zone, get yourself into a nice, thoughtful place. So we'll put on mantra. We'll put on Kundalini yoga songs that aren't in English. and they're just this like uber chill music, just like you'd hear if you were like getting a massage or taking a yoga class. And then we're hand grinding coffee beans, making almond milk.
I really like that. I want to get into that really badly.
It's all of a sudden, you know, like I said, it's those first 2 hours, you're getting some naked sun, whatever it is, it's like you've got to do it. And it's super important. So in any case, we're addicted to our phones, and it's no different than gambling. It's like, I got to check my email again. Why? You know, why? Right? And I remember in Tim Ferriss's book, I think it was the first one, he said, you know, check your email at 10 and 4.
Yeah.
And that's genius. Like, that's what everyone needs to do. Because I think a lot of us in jobs, corporate jobs especially, it's like you're on email so much, you're never actually doing shit.
100%.
It's like, when are you actually getting things done if you're just on email all day, or if you're just on social all day or whatever? So I just think there's this balance. And here's the big thing is the words moderation, the words balance, those, like, people don't have the right to use those words until they've experienced the ends of the spectrum. So in other words, from a dietary perspective, I want to use balance, right? If you're in a hole, it's not the time to use a smaller shovel.
Yep.
Right. You don't know what balance
like
is.
Yeah.
So until you've gone a week or 2 weeks with absolutely no tech, you don't know how much tech is healthy.
You actually need. Yep. Absolutely.
Exactly. So it's, and this is the same thing with nutrition. It's like, whatever nutrition plan you like, whether it's vegan, whether it's vegan or keto or plant-based or paleo, it's like, until you go hog wild for a month, like true paleo or true vegan, like, you don't know what balance is until you go low carb for a month. You don't know what low carb is until you eliminate gluten, sugar, lentils, whatever. Then you don't know what eating them in moderation means, because one bean for some people is not moderation.
It's crazy that the low carb thing gets me every time. I try to tell my mom that, even. She's going to listen to this show for sure and yell at me. But I'll be like, Mom, like, try to just, like, you know. At one point, she really wanted to do like paleo stuff. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, can I have sushi? And I was like, I was like, Mom, I just explained to you fruits, vegetables, meats, and nuts, right?
Yeah,
just explained it. Does rice come up in that at all? Well, sushi is fish. And I'm like, but the rice, Mom. Like, can we talk about the rice?
There's shit around the fish.
She still kept going. Sashimi.
Right.
I'm like, well, it's got rice underneath it.
Yeah.
But it's amazing what people think, for sure.
Yeah, it's wild.
And I think a lot of that stuff nowadays, at least, comes from being stuck into busy trap to me, right? Mm-hmm. People want to feel all day like they're kind of doing something, and they're just kind of clinging on from little task to little task to little task to get them through the day. And then at the end of the day, you actually look back and it almost feels like you accomplished nothing,
right?
Because all it was just an email here, text message here, call there. And it's all these people roping you in all these different directions, but there's not actually any focused work going on at any point. And I fall into that trap all the time as well. And my best days where the end of the day comes along and I kind of look up and I'm like, wow, today was amazing. And I feel amazing.
Yeah.
Are the days where, and this goes back to Tim Ferriss's theory as well, the whole batching, right? So batching big tasks together and kind of blocking out 90-minute blocks throughout the day that are uninterrupted.
Right.
And those are the days where I, one, am most productive, and then two, 6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8 p.m. comes along, and I can keep going. I'm not burned out. I'm not tired. I feel great. I get home. I can make dinner, probably something healthy, you know what I mean? And it just, it feels like I'm in this flow, whereas on the other days where I'm just email here, text message here, text message there, right? Not getting anything done. And then 4 p.m. comes along and I'm like, I can't do it anymore. I'm so tired. I'm calling it a day. And then you go home, you eat some shitty food, probably order pizza because you feel bad for yourself.
Right.
Right. And there's, it's to me, it's the busy trap. And it's so interesting because, and Ryan falls into this category as well, and I'm sure you do as well. The life that I've built for myself, I'm my own boss at all times, and if I want to sleep in tomorrow, I'll sleep in tomorrow. If I want to wake up and the waves are good, I'll go surfing, and then I start my day at 11:30. Mm-hmm. There's nobody that can tell me that I can't do it. Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting talking to other people. One, they're afraid of doing it themselves because they will feel judged by everybody else.
Right.
And then two, there's a lot of people that tell me, oh, you don't have a real job. Or you don't work hard.
Right.
Or you don't do this.
Right.
Ryan and I had a fucking amazing day today in Venice before doing this podcast, right? And I promise you, the stuff that we got done today, in between the fun activities and the work stuff, I accomplished more than 90% of the people in America because you guys are just sitting at a freaking cubicle, right, wasting time from 9 to 5. Yep. How much work from 9 to 5 are you really getting done?
Besides liking my photo on Instagram,
yeah,
which I saw you do. Not exactly. You, not
yeah,
you personally.
Yeah, exactly.
But
no,
like,
I know exactly what you
there's
mean.
There's 3,000 people that liked my photo today that I know were in
that
a cubicle.
Work.
For
yeah.
sure.
My one of my best friends.
And they'll tell me a story about tomorrow in class when I'm coaching this video they saw on YouTube, yeah, and I know it was on their.
Those are the people that know every single thing about your Instagram, every single thing you post. They know the details about your story.
Because that's what they're
you
doing.
You post a coffee shop and they look it up because they don't fucking dare doing anything.
And I love you for it, all of you guys.
Yeah.
Keep doing it.
My best friend, and him and I actually graduated the same day and went completely different paths. And I went kind of like the graphic design,
yeah,
super like, right, I do whatever I want, laissez faire type of thing.
Yep.
And then he went consulting,
yeah,
which is the complete opposite spectrum, especially
right,
when you're a young consultant, you're
yep,
just getting hammered, right?
Yep.
So he tells me of days where, yeah, dude, I got to the office today at 7 in the morning and it's 2 in the morning now and I'm still here.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, there is no way in hell
right,
that from 7 a.m. to 2 a.m., you were actually productive this entire time.
Yeah.
Because if I was productive the way I'm productive when I feel like my 90-minute blocks, right, from 7 a.m. to 2 a.m., I wouldn't have to work for the rest of the year.
Right.
I am done, dude. Yeah. There's so much work getting done.
Right.
Right?
Right.
But in that 7 to 2, how much fucking time wasting is going on?
Right.
How many meetings are you going to
right,
where nothing gets done?
Right.
How many phone calls do you get on where nothing gets discussed? And it's because people love being busy.
Right.
People love going to meetings.
Right.
They love it.
Right.
Oh, I got a meeting. I can't.
Oh, that's the best. I got a meeting.
Yeah.
I got a meeting.
I can't do it.
Yeah.
What actually gets discussed in these meetings, right?
Yeah.
And I think.
And how far in advance of the meeting was the meeting booked? Because
yeah,
if it was booked in the last 48 hours or the last 4 hours, like it's a bullshit meeting.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So I think a lot of that circles back to the phone thing.
Yeah.
Right?
It does.
And always being on your phone. You know what the one thing is, too, that I've noticed was it's super interesting to me? If you're in a public place and you're by yourself, let's say you're at a bar with a friend,
yep,
and your friend goes to the bathroom. Now you're sitting at the bar by yourself, right? If you're not on your phone and you're actually just sitting there and just kind of like looking around, people look at you weird.
Right.
People are like, what the fuck is wrong with that guy?
Yeah.
Right? Because they yeah, expect you that as soon as
yeah,
your friend gets up, I'm like, oh, here's my
yeah,
chance.
Yeah,
right? I'm
going to
take out my phone and check my
yeah,
Instagram.
I'm missing a meeting.
Yeah, exactly. I got to check my emails.
Right.
I'm sure
there's
someone,
a Facebook Live right now. If
yeah,
someone else is meeting, I could be in on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure Obama is trying to call me.
Right. You should just have a video of you sitting there not being on your phone, just like looking around. So
yeah,
other people
exactly,
are watching. Other people that are by themselves at a bar are watching you be by yourself at a bar
on their phone.
But no, I like you nailed it, man. And what's so funny is, you know, it's like the you don't use it, you lose it principle.
Mm-hmm.
And that ability to be alone is actually a really important skill 100%. For a human being. And it's something that, you know, at Runga, you've got a lot of folks around, but you also have a lot of places to go be yourself and find yourself or whatever. And maybe that sounds a little cliche. But
it's so weird when you're young. You're just like, be by myself. And you get older and like you hear someone say they want to be by themselves when you're younger, and you're like, that guy's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Then you get older, and you're like, oh, I want to be alone.
Dude. Yeah.
And being alone and being lonely is like a big
right,
difference too, right?
Right?
Like choosing to be alone
right,
can be very healthy.
Right. Oh,
point,
my gosh. Well, that's the thing. If you're not an independent person, you're not a very productive person, or you know, in a relationship, you're going to have trouble being an active member of the relationship
yeah,
because it becomes a dependency or
mm-hmm,
whatever. But no, I think a lot of the things you just said are absolutely spot on. And I think this being busy mindset, I think one of the things I was going to add when you were talking about, feeling really accomplished and productive, you're also going to sleep better that night because you know you did shit and wrapped it up A to Z. It's done. It checked the box. And I think so many people with sleep issues, if they wrote down the 5 things they need to get done today in the morning – and just got rid of their phone and did those 5 things. And
yeah,
even if that was batching or chunking or
mm-hmm,
an hour here, half hour break, an hour here, you could work 5 hours a day. If
totally,
you go an hour straight on the first one, go do 25 minutes on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
An hour straight on the second one, go do 25 minutes on the bike. An hour, like, you would accomplish more in a day than other folks do in a week, and you technically only worked 5 hours.
And also doing one thing at a time, right? You're not on the bike answering emails, listening to a podcast, right? You're doing one thing, and then you're moving on to the next.
Right. Well, I break that rule quite a bit. Well, that's the beauty of the fan bike. That's the beauty, because I can be on a phone call. I can be in a meeting at 50 RPM on that thing, and no one knows that I'm on the fan bike. And so that's.
And then no one knows that you're not actually in the meeting.
No one
that's knows. How most meetings go. Most people are on the fan bike.
We had a phone call this morning where
people
90,
were for 90%
sure. of the people on the phone, like it was a phone meeting.
Right.
And 90% of the people were not there. Because when someone called their name, it would take like 20 seconds. And you would hear like noise in the background. They're like,
He was like in the middle of wiping.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoosh.
Sprinkler fold. He's like, fold.
The whole phone thing is actually a huge topic to me, and I would love to jump into that.
Yeah.
Because I struggle with that a lot as well. And I think that generations to come are going to struggle even more because now see kids sitting at dinner with their parents, and their parents just hand them an iPad.
Yep.
Right? So from so early on, they're introduced to technology and introduced that it will kind of take your mind off of real life and what you're focused on. So I struggle a lot with it. I feel like I'm on my phone way too much. I feel like I'm wasting time with Instagram way too much. And the worst part about it is, and this is where I kind of notice that it's an obsession and it's an unhealthy addiction.
Right.
I can go home and I will take my phone and I will leave my phone in my room upstairs. And I'll be like, okay, I'm gonna get away from my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go downstairs and I'll do something. And my mind is still with my phone the entire time.
Right.
So even though I'm physically disconnected from it, I'm like, oh, I wonder who texted me. Or I wonder who liked my picture.
My phone's flipped over right now, and I've literally thought about what's on it for
a while
now.
It's so
and I haven't flipped it over. I'm doing it. The whole podcast, I'm not going to flip it over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it feels so good when you accomplish it, but then you pick it back up and you're like, oh, my God, thank
you. It's going to be Christmas morning when I flip this thing over.
Dude, that's what fucking that's what drug addicts do, dude. Right. They're staring at the drugs and they're like, I'm not going to do a drug. And then they make it through like 45.
I'll just do a little bit.
Yeah. And they make it through 45 minutes and they're like, I did fucking great. I'm doing a bunch of coke right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the same thing.
This podcast just took a turn.
Oh, sorry. We're in Venice. Douche rooms. Is that better?
Yeah.
Ayahuasca.
Psilocybin.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's not a blowjob. It's fellatio.
So where do you think it's coming from? Where do you think it's going? And what do you think are the best practices for someone who maybe can't go on a retreat, can't get away days? Best practices throughout the days to implement to kind of, cure the addiction, I guess.
Right, man. And I mean, it's the habit loop, right? And I think Charles Duhigg has a book called The Power of Habit. And ultimately, if there's a habit, it's a loop. So, and it's no different than somebody gambling or, anything else or doing drugs. It's, it's a reward. There's a reward center.
Yeah.
Right? And what's interesting about gamblers is they've shown that the reward in the brain, the release of the different chemicals, is the same whether you win or lose.
Ooh.
So whether you have not enough likes or too many likes, you have not enough comments or more comments than you were expecting.
Wow.
You're getting the same positive kind of dopamine rush, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's why we're addicted to our emails, because we're actually seeking bad news, right? It's like, we're waiting to see what we didn't do.
That's fucking crazy.
You know what's crazy is I have so many emails that I unsubscribe. I'm like, I don't want to see this anymore. Uh-huh. But then there's some that I'm like, I'm just going to leave it. Even though I know I'm going to delete it every day, I'll look at my emails and be like, I have 74 emails.
Yeah. I'm really important.
49 of them are complete bullshit. Yeah. And I should unsubscribe, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
No, but it's and you know what's funny, and it's and I think there's important stuff, right? Like the way my email is done, and by the way, I probably have 30,000 emails in my inbox right now.
Okay, that'd be my 74.
But the thing is, it's because I don't give a shit about 30,000 emails.
Yeah.
So in other words, the people that are likely to be emailing me, their emails get sent to a separate folder. So I have like my VIP folder. And the people who email me regularly, I know it's going to VIP, and like the world ends if I don't answer these emails. And that's automatic. And then if I finish those emails, then I'll go peruse the 30,000, right? And I'll go back a day and see what I missed. But 80% of your problems come from 20% of your shit.
Yep.
So like do what you can to get rid of that shit.
Right.
I think that's the biggest thing. But also, it's we all deal with it. It is an addiction. And you're always going to have to recalibrate. And that's what I said, like with Runga, it's like you need this every year. Like even if you have 180 degree experience, mm-hmm. you live in 2018 when the phone and there's people designing the elements of that phone to get you more, right? So it's like you're going to have to keep coming back. It's just a matter of what are you going to do to counter it, right? And where's your consciousness? Because I think that's the biggest thing. It's just vigilance. You know, you got to, you know, one of the big parts about me moving to Venice, you know, I lived in Boston for 32 years. And one of the reason I moved to Venice was that I wanted to control the five people I spend the most time with, which is a big kind of thing that I preach about.
Mm-hmm. The Tim Ferriss thing, you are the average of your five people. Or no?
Yeah.
That's actually somebody else, yeah. I think, but he talks about it.
I think it's like Aristotle or something, yeah. right? But it could be Tim Ferriss,
Tim Ferriss is like the modern Aristotle, so we'll go with it.
Yeah. For this episode, if you look up in the sky, it's Tim Ferriss.
Yeah.
Oh my God. The wind blows, he...
Yeah, he strung these lights for me.
Oh, of course he did.
while he was on the phone with Obama.
Oh, damn it, he beat me.
And he was on the bike, So, you know, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with, and you have to be vigilant about that. And that includes your phone. That's the thing, is that if I want Alan Watts, who died in 1973, if I like his vibes and I want to have that, I can get him into my five people. You want to know how? Listen to him more often than you spend more total time throughout the day than you spend with somebody else, with your boss or your coworker or whatever. So you can control the five people, but it's vigilance. And that's why I never leave my crab shack. I invite the people over that I want to hang out with, and that's it.
I like that.
It's been pretty life-changing because you don't realize the damage if you're going, to – and I'm not saying this was my experience, but I think a lot of people listening in a corporate environment, if you're going to an office every day and you don't like your boss, that is actually a really kind of – that's a reptilian stressor. It's like a really deep stress to go interact, just like my client Venice, interact with somebody every single day that you don't feel adds to your vitality or your energy is a detractor. And if I'm following people on Instagram, maybe it's a positive thing. Maybe the people that follow you really resonate with you and they're globbed onto you because they hate all the other people around them or they wish they weren't sitting next to this guy or whatever, right? So, but I just think, you know, the biggest thing is awareness and vigilance and protection, right? So protect the first 2 hours of your day. Protect the people you spend the most time with. And that could mean, if you can't prevent it, that could mean on your weekend, like I was telling you about Sunday Fun Day that we do here, I invite a few people over every Sunday, Amelia and I, and we have the people over that we would love to spend time with. So I just think that's important. And then obviously ditching the phone whenever possible is huge. So, I think I'm the only one without my phone on the table right now.
Yeah, you are. You're crushing it. Yeah,
I'm crushing
yours
it.
Yours is up, like though. Mine's down.
I know. Mine's not doing disturbed, though. So, and I have to try and do that more. I think it's such a killer to productivity. And I think one theory that I've kind of came up with, and tell me if you guys think this sounds logical at all, I think it's such a killer to creativity also. Mm-hmm. Because everything that gets created nowadays, and you can look at all the different forms of art, is very fleeting, right? Mm-hmm. It's cool now, and it gets super viral on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and it gets blown up, and this new album came out, and this album is now the greatest album ever for 2 days.
Yeah.
Right? And then no one ever talks about it again.
Right.
And it's the same thing with movies, and it's the same thing with any form of art that you look at. And it's so crazy to me because when you look back, you look at Titanic, people still watch Titanic nowadays, right? There's not a lot of movies that are coming out right now that you even think about a year later, right? And it's the same thing with music. We still listen to the Beatles. Point. No one's going to listen to fucking Post Malone, no offense, in 50 years.
I don't even know who that is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's killing creativity because it makes everything has to be now, right? Everything has to be super instant. And the like instant gratification factor. And this is cool now, but it's not going to be cool in 20 minutes anymore.
I'm so upset that there's not real rock music anymore.
God, dude, like,
it blows me away. I'm like, how is someone not broken into that right now?
Yeah, even hip hop, dude. Like, Fish and I have been listening to this like old school hip hop station on satellite radio driving up here, and every song that came on,
it, you're just instantly bobbing your head.
Bobbing your head. And I told him, like, dude, this makes you feel something.
Yeah.
Instantly the song comes on. It puts a smile on my face.
Yep.
And it makes you feel better about yourself.
Right.
You know, like it provokes emotion.
Right.
Whereas with the music nowadays, it's just kind of like background music.
I'd rather listen to a podcast right now than like almost anything.
Yeah.
Dude, like, man. Yeah. Like super, super amazing insight. And I think that that is the danger. I think earlier you had a question that I didn't answer, and that was about youth and like the fear of like where they're going. And that's the danger right there.
Absolutely.
It's just this expectant kind of attitude towards everything, that the grass is always greener. There's always something else. There's always something better. I think that's super dangerous. And you know what else? And I just thought of this too. At Paleo Effects, we had these business cards for Runga that had a beautiful picture of the Dominican venue that we got. Mm-hmm. And this kid, baby, 3, picks up the postcard, right? It's a 5x8 and goes like this.
Oh, shut up. Trying to zoom in.
Try to zoom in like it was an iPad.
Yeah.
Right? So when you take your thumb, and you're obviously we're not on video here, yeah. but the way that you would show, yeah, make like an iPhone zoom in, and it was a piece of paper, and it was
dude.
That kid doesn't know what a picture is.
That's insane.
And it was absolutely, absolutely insane. And I think that honestly, like you talked about anxiety and productivity, and it's like if you're not in the present, you're anxious.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, that's almost, like, the definition. Mm-hmm. I think the Devil's Dictionary says it best. It says the future, and the definition of future is where your friends are true, your affairs are prosperous, and your happiness is assured.
Yeah.
Right? Because we're always projecting ourselves there. And that's exactly what you're saying here. Yep. And it's this attitude of just always, always something else and never being satisfied with the moment, ultimately. Like, absolutely. I'm not satisfied. My friend goes to the bathroom. I'm not satisfied with the moment.
Yeah.
I think that's really, really sad and dangerous. But exactly what you said, and I think about, like, Jim Morrison. I think about, Elvis.
Yep.
Like, I think about
Jimi Hendrix.
Hendrix. Like, part of the reason they had such an impact is that they were only around. They came in. They were a flash in the pan. Jim Morrison comes in, just amazing music that no one had ever heard before, with so much just emotion and creativity and spirituality, yep, and all this stuff behind it.
Same
and then he was
Hendrix.
Gone.
Yep.
And he was immortalized. I mean, imagine if, I've maybe said this before, but like if Michael Jackson died in 1989, he'd be right up there.
Yeah.
I think he's still up there.
Right.
But
I know what you're saying.
For everyone that thinks he's up there, there's 50 other people that think he's a weirdo.
Died at 27.
Yeah.
Right.
Kurt Cobain.
You know what
Jimi
the other
Hendrix.
Thing is that goes in with the same kind of thought process? If you, I like to think about Prince, for example, right?
Yeah.
If you think of Prince, That guy's an alien, right? Like,
yeah.
he's nothing like you and me.
Right.
Right? Like, if you just, the way he is on stage, the way he presents himself,
right,
he is so just out there, and
right,
he's a rock star,
right?
Right? And it makes you gravitate toward him because it's like, oh my God, he's Prince, right? It's
on
his pedestal. Nowadays, I know everything about every single artist that ever lived, right? Or like that lives now, sorry,
yep,
in like our generation,
yep,
right? Because they all have Instagram. And they all have Twitter, and they're letting me know when they're taking a shit, and they're
right,
Instagramming their food,
right,
and they're doing this and doing that, so they become more human.
Right.
Right? You're like, oh, that guy's just like me. He has a lot more money in a private jet, but he's just like me.
Right.
With Prince, you have no fucking idea who this guy is. He lives
right
in this amazing house, and he throws these outrageous parties,
right,
and that's it.
Right.
Right? So I think that also plays into it, that because of social media, we know so much more about everybody,
yep,
that we're all kind of on the same level now.
Right, right.
That's actually a good observation,
yeah,
for sure.
So if I want to...
When everybody is something, nobody's anything.
There you go. I like that. For the people at home that maybe are like me and want to get away from this a little bit more, how can I bring the Runga lifestyle into my everyday?
Yeah. I actually, you know what's funny is I made a picto chart or whatever you call it, where it's like the 8 steps. Because
mm-hmm,
ultimately, Runga is about controlling your day.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts by controlling the first 2 hours. Cold shower, right? All the stuff we've talked about today. Taking breaks from your phone. Getting movement in. You know, a big thing is several movement sessions throughout the day, not sit on your ass 8 hours, crush it for 40 minutes,
yeah,
right? That's not a thing. It should be just routine. I wrote an article last night, the three problems with standing desks. Right, and it's because you know, ultimately you use it as a sitting desk half the time anyway. You know, you're standing not in a very good position. Mm-hmm. And standing isn't the opposite of sitting. The opposite of sitting is walking.
Moving. Yeah.
And moving. So I think moving consistently throughout the day, not taking phone calls, sitting down, taking cold showers, figuring out what is your – we use the term, you call it active meditation. We use dynamic meditation.
Yep.
So if you're holding your breath underwater for as long as you can in a free dive, you're in the moment. If you're swinging a 53-pound kettlebell, you're in the moment. If you're meditating – and that was a big thing with me in meditation, because I was never the type – you know, I've been prescribed attention deficit medication since I was five.
Yeah.
Right. And it's you know, my world was always just 1,000 miles an hour, and sitting on a mat and meditating was never something I was able to do. Never. Now I'm finally, you know, 33 years later, finally able to do it. But what's funny is, in the yoga community, you know, silent meditation is actually for the very advanced yogis.
Oh wow.
Right? Because ultimately your brain does wander and does go places, and you don't want to be more stressed when you finish meditating than when you started. And if you're thinking about 50 things, then that's going to happen. So use things that are dynamic in nature that bring you into the present moment until you get there.
Okay.
And don't feel bad that if you can't sit on the mat and breathe.
Yeah.
But breath work is critical. And I think where I started with breath work was actually breath holds, like 30-30. So 30 seconds of breathing, 30 seconds of holding, 30 seconds of breathing, and do that for 10 or 20 minutes. Almost anyone can do it, and it's just a super relaxing breath. So do that 10 minutes a day. Walk 15,000 steps a day. So there's a lot of these little things that you can, even if you're in a corporate environment, you can get up and take a cold shower.
Yeah.
You can not look at your phone for the first 2 hours that you're awake in the morning.
Yeah.
You can not check email profusely 50 times a day. You can walk 10,000 steps. You can take the stairs. You can breathe for 10 minutes at some point. So there's so many things, and I think we talked about personal training clients, and you know, there's always an excuse. We're always busy, but it's like, no, you have plenty of time. Actually, chart out the number of hours in the day and the number of hours you're at work, and see what what's left.
Absolutely.
And you were conscious and awake for 7 hours today.
Yep.
That you weren't at work. So what were you doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
where'd the day go?
Where'd the day
go? Especially the writing down thing. That's one thing that I've learned in college where you're thinking about all this stuff, like, oh, my God, I got to do this, I got to do this, and it's all just floating around your brain, and then you put it on a piece of paper, you're like, oh, that's not that bad. It's just like four things. I can totally do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's the – actually, and thank you so much for bringing that up. That's huge, is when you have – and this is something I've struggled with, and I'll get overwhelmed at times just like anybody.
Yeah.
And it's like sometimes you got so much on your brain, you feel super stressed. As soon as you write everything down
– yeah.
You're not stressed anymore.
It's such an easy task.
Such an easy task. And there was one day that you can see I have the whiteboard. It's not on the wall right now, but it's a 3-foot by 5-foot whiteboard I have in my living room. And one day I was super overwhelmed, and I just started writing, and I filled the entire whiteboard with shit that I was thinking about.
Yeah.
To-dos, things I forgot, odds and ends, stuff I wanted to get done in the next week, the next month, the next 3 months. Stuff I'm thinking about creating, blogs I want to write, content that I'm going to need, you know, just all these things. And as soon as you write it down, it's like deflate,
yeah.
Right?
100%.
And I think writing in the morning and writing at night is when you're in that space, mm-hmm. is just essential.
Nighttime for sure. Right before, yeah. I go to bed is when my best ideas come up. I hate it, but
yeah,
it's really a great time for me.
Right.
Yeah. Right. All right. How does that?
That was really, really good.
Yeah, it was really good. Do you have anything to add?
So how can people find you a little bit more, the Runga movement?
Yeah, so Runga, rungalife.com. We also have Instagram. It's Runga Life. I'm Coach Joe DI on Instagram and Facebook. And Spartan, of course, spartan.com.
Okay.
And that's about everything.
All right, cool.
Awesome.
And in the little Crab Shack in Venice.
Yeah.
Crab Shack.
I love that.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
So.
You all good?
Yeah. You guys know where to find me at. You guys can check me out on CrossFitChalk.com. We have about 1,000 people right now on the CrossFit Chalk program, which is awesome and completely, you know, blowing up all over the world. I get messages from people all the time who are tagging me in their workouts, and I love it. And if you guys ever want to go ahead and sign up for that, you get a mobile app and you get to follow us along in the gym and see what we do every single day. And we do affiliate programming as well to make gyms better. Yeah, yeah.
I'm all set. Good to go.
You're all good? Yeah. All right.
Joe,
dude, super
so
fun.
Much.
Thanks for coming by.
Yeah. I had an awesome time. Loved it.
Yeah, I'll come by a couple more times and get one of those amazing coffees of yours.
All right.
Sure. Oh, man. Yeah. That was really good. I forgot about it almost.
All right. Thanks, brother.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. Later, guys.
All righty, y'all. And that will do it from us. I hope you guys had a fucking blast listening to this. Joe is such a cool character just all the way around. So make sure you guys check him out on his social media at Coach Joe DI, always posting super cool just mobility stuff, breathwork stuff, Kundalini yoga stuff, if you guys are into any of that. But if not, his Instagram is even entertaining if you don't care about that. So make sure you guys give him a follow. Hit him up. Make sure you tell him how much you love this episode. And if you ever see him at the Spartan race, give him a little tap on the butt and tell him it's from Yaya. Sure, he'll love that. If you guys are in Venice, just break into his house and make sure he makes you one of his almond lattes, coffee things. I can't even call it a coffee. It's just way too good. So yeah, whenever you're in Venice, any time of the day, just break into Joe's house, tell him I send you, and I'm sure he'll make you a coffee. Other than that, guys, make sure you guys sign up for that Chalk Online thing. Honestly, free month. You guys have nothing to lose. Head over to crossfitchalk.com. Use code at RealChalk, all caps, no at, just RealChalk, all caps, and get that full free month to try it out. And we'll see you here next week. Thanks for tuning in.